Badquaker.com podcast. Today is Thursday, May 24th, 2012, and my name is Ben Stone. I may have a correction coming up. One of the listeners emailed me from Chicago and gave me some information about the Occupy folks that are down there and the NATO situation, and they're indicating that there's really very little notice of the NATO thing. It's more or less an excuse to get the Occupy people out, and there's very few people actually upset with NATO. So I need to check into that a little bit, and I might have to have a correction or even rethink my earlier podcast where I was talking about the NATO and the Occupy people and so forth. So we'll see about that. I'll try to look into that this weekend and see if I can give you guys some kind of feedback on that, or some kind of update based on the feedback I got. Okay, and this is a good excuse to say, you know, feel free to email me, ben@badquaker.com. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm working on, as much as all of us in the Liberty Movement complain about the mainstream media, to a large extent, it's kind of like the roads. You know, we're stuck with them. It's what we have. So we still end up depending on them to a certain extent. And that's one of the things, you know, that's always thrown in our face. Well, if you're really an anarchist, if you really believe there shouldn't be a government, why do you drive on roads? You know, okay, let's start with step A. But anyway, so that's kind of the same thing. You know, the mainstream media, we're stuck with it currently, and we get so much information filtered through it that even a lot of the liberty-minded media and a lot of the non-mainstream media, you know, it's impossible not to have a certain tilt that's fed to us, because there's so much, the state's influence is just so wide in these things. It's really sad. And I should mention also that over at Reddit, there's a new section in Reddit. I've talked about Reddit a little bit lately, so there's a new section in Reddit. And one of our one of the listeners was kind enough to come over to the website at badquaker.com and point it out to me. So I ran over there and got it's not a membership. What do you call it? Anyway, I joined that thing. And then I, over on Facebook as well, I jumped over and liked the page on Facebook. And it's Ohio Voluntarists. So if you're not in Ohio, it doesn't really matter. But if you are an Ohio resident, as I am currently, unfortunately, I have nothing against Ohio or the people that live in Ohio. It's just I really would like to either go someplace where it's cold or hot. You know, if I'm going to be in a hot climate, I want it to be relatively dry, and I want to get used to it being hot. And if I'm in a cold climate, I want it to be cold, and I don't want to have to sweat ever. But Ohio is not like that. Ohio frustrates me. And a lot of that is, you know, health issues. I fight with arthritis, so you know, when the weather is going back and forth and it's hot and it's cold and it's sticky and these storms roll through the way they do, it's very difficult to tolerate it health-wise. But anyway, all that's all beside the point. That's just random gibberish that an old person talks about. Let me tell you about my condition. Anyway, so there is a Reddit community that's developing. It's called Ohio Voluntarism, I believe, is the name of it. And if I can remember to do so, I'll put a link to that in the notes for today on the website. And one other little piece of information over on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, if you're a user of Facebook, You go over and check out badquaker.com on Facebook. I don't think it's that hard to find in the search. You know, Facebook's weird. Sometimes real obvious stuff is difficult to find in the search. But anyway, if you are a Facebook user and you listen to this podcast, go over to badquaker.com on Facebook, or you can get to that. You can get to the page by going to the actual website, badquaker.com, and go over on the right-hand side and hit the Facebook button and go to it that way. Anyway, go over there. Give us a like if you want to. But one way or the other, on the Facebook page for badquaker.com, we have a request that we've put up, and we've gotten a pretty good response from it so far. We're going to be, we're in the process right now, there are people working on it, of upgrading the website and giving it a much better look. This is a professional company that does this, people who do this for a living, and they're interested in helping out people in the Liberty Movement, and so they're doing this for us, and they're giving us just a crazy good deal, and helping us out to make the website more functional and look better and look more professional and everything. And so one of the things that they're going to be doing is we're putting together a collage of people, of faces, of people who have been a positive influence on the movement as a whole. Now, we're not getting real particular because, you know, as I've said, like I think just yesterday I was talking about Murray Rothbard. There's Murray Rothbard was maybe one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century, up there with Mises and with some others. And absolutely foundational in our movement, in the libertarian movement, and in the liberty movement as a whole. If it weren't for Murray Rothbard, I hate to really upset the Rand people again, but I think if it weren't for Murray Rothbard and the clarity of his thought, the libertarian movement would have gone off in a psycho direction of the Rand followers, and we really would have just been almost nothing by now. You know, or maybe even it would have been something as goofy as as Scientology, but you know, maybe not that bad. The Rand people are not as bad as the L. Ron Hubbard followers, but anyway, and I'm not really, this is not to attack the Rand people, but there are some pretty scary Rand followers out there. Anyway, but Murray, that's really off the topic, but Murray was so foundational in our movement, and his thinking influenced so many people, and yet there are things that Murray was just dead wrong on, things that Hans Hermann Hoppe has corrected Murray's position on, things that Stefan Kinsella has clarified the situation and actually corrected Murray. Murray was going down the right path on intellectual property, but he really, you know, he didn't have an understanding of the bigger scope of how things function. So, I mean, he hadn't spent his life learning about intellectual property laws. So it's understandable that he wasn't an expert on it. But Kinsella came in and just clarified that point and fixed what Murray had been confused about. And Murray, of course, clarified and fixed what Mises was wrong about. And, of course, Mises was right on things that Hayek was seriously confused about. So if you take any of these individuals, any one of them was right on very important things and was wrong on some things, just like me, you know, I'm wrong on some things and I'm right on some things. So what you have to do, it's kind of like I believe it was the Apostle Paul that said, you hear all things and cling fast to that which is good. And so that's what we have to do. We have to hear the different messages that people are saying, and then we have to look at them with a skeptical eye and say, you know, and bump it up against reality and bump it up against first principles and say, does this really match the zero aggression principle? Does this really match property rights? Is this really moving us towards liberty, or is this not really helping the cause? And so back to my request on Facebook, what we want to do is make a collage of faces of people who have moved the cause of liberty forward. And some of these people may have been way wrong on some things, but if they have, within the course of their life, added something very fundamental and very positive to the movement, then I want to put their face into this collage. So over on Facebook, We made a request that anybody who can add, you know, just give us a name of somebody who has been influential in the movement, living or dead, and we're going to put about 50 faces in the collage, and then we're going to put about 10 of them with quotes so that they'll rotate and come up to the surface of the collage, so to speak. And there'll be a little, a little quote bubble there with their quote in it, and an enlarged version of their face. So let's just say you have 50 people in the background, and then let's just say Murray Rothbard pops up with a Murray Rothbard quote, and then after a certain time frame, he'll fall back into the distance, and let's just say Lysander Spooner comes up with a quote, and then he falls back into the distance after a certain time frame, and then maybe, Robert Higgs pops up with a quote or something like this. So the request in Facebook was that if you have someone you'd like to see in those 50 faces, then drop the person's name in there on that thread in Facebook. And if you have a particular quote of any person who's added to the Liberty Movement, then put their name and the quote in there, and we'll use out of those, that we'll at least look at and consider those as we're putting together the 50 faces, and we're probably going to use about 10, somewhere 8 to 10 faces with quotes in addition to the 50 in the background. So anyway, or if you'd like to, if you're not in Facebook and you'd like to contribute to that, just shoot me an email, ben@badquaker.com, and include whatever names that you feel should be added, and we'll look up their pictures and so forth. And if you have any good quotes, then give me the quote and give me the name that goes with it. If you happen to know where it comes from, that would be handy too, so we can put... if it comes from, let's say it's a Murray Rothbard quote, and it comes from Conceived in Liberty, volume this, chapter that, page so-and-so. You don't have to do that, but if you have it handy, that can help too. That way we can make sure that if anybody disputes anything, we can have some kind of documentation of it. Well, that was a lot of talk before I get to what I want to do. I'm going to play an audio clip for you. The clip is 2 minutes long, and it's Adam Kokesh from Adam versus the Man. And I want to clarify some things before I play this clip. First off, Adam is very important to the Liberty Movement. He has a very large group of listeners and viewers that regularly watch him and support him. And I don't have anything against him at all. He's done some great work for the Liberty Movement. He is a self-proclaimed anarchist, and he is a self-proclaimed supporter of Ron Paul and Ron Paul's presidency. So someone wrote him a letter and said, how do you balance these two issues between being an anarchist and a supporter of Ron Paul for president? So in the video that I stole this paper, this audio clip from, in the video, he spends about 8 minutes or so. I believe it's about an 8 or 9 minute long video, and I'll put the link on this page at badquaker.com so you can watch the whole video and make sure I'm not taking anything out of context. But I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm just going to play like the last 2 minutes of the audio portion of it. And he goes through some of the standard argument as to why an anarchist would support a politician and vote for that politician and so forth. He goes through some of the standard argument with that. And then in the last 2 minutes, he sums up what he's saying. And he does so in a way that it really reveals the flaws in what he's saying. And so as I go through this and dissect it, I need for you to understand that I'm not attacking Adam. I have a great appreciation for Adam's, all of Adam's contributions to the movement and everything. I'm using Adam as an example because he so clearly articulates what so many anarchists believe. And it's why so many anarchists are supporting Ron Paul and working hard for Ron Paul and have such high hopes in success by using that method. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take that apart, but I'm going to try not to be harsh against Adam. I want to represent his views as accurately as possible, and then show where his mistake is based, where his mistakes are based, that is. And again, I'm not doing this to attack Adam. I'm not doing this in any way to humiliate him. I'm doing this as a way to show where the philosophical flaw is that causes an anarchist to think that he can change the world by voting. Okay, so here's the clip. This is the last 2 minutes of the video, and you can catch the link on badquaker.com and hear the whole video from there. Okay, here we go.
One way or another, it's going to be manifest in the political process, is it not? I mean, you can't have this levolution and full embracing of the libertarian philosophy throughout the United States and have this government thing just sort of going on its own. Like, at some point, we have to elect someone to go in and at least deconstruct the whole thing, to, you know, privatize all of the resources, to distribute them back to the people, to turn over the resources that the government has taken over to those that they were taken from. So there's a process for that, and I really think it's not an easy process for us to be extricated from. So, you know, it becomes kind of a chicken and egg argument. Are we going to have the paradigm shift and then elect someone to dismantle the government, or are we going to elect someone to dismantle the government and then in that process or in that election change the paradigm and get to a more free society? I don't really know. But one way or another, you need the political aspect as well in order to achieve a free society, because I think that in dismantling the government, if we were to simply, if like, for example, if the dollar were to collapse out of the blue tomorrow and you had certain economic turmoil, really some chaos as a result, what would spring up might be worse. And this is the argument that if you abolish government, you'll have a power vacuum and you'll have a worse power take its place. Now, if the power is abolished because people want it to, because they believe in freedom now, well, obviously you're not going to create a vacuum in which another corrupt power can come into being. But we do need an orderly dismantling of the government, and that's why the revolution, the levolution, still needs politicians, you know, at least at some point. So that's why I support Ron Paul, and that's why I don't think there's any contradiction in being an anarchist, anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, philosophical libertarian, and being engaged in the political process.
Okay, and again, that was Adam Kokesh from Adam versus the Man, and that is the last 2 minutes, starting at the seven minute mark on the video and going until the end of the video. Okay, now and one more time, I am not attacking Adam. I am using his very clearly articulated explanation, and I want to show you some flaws in it. And it's why I think many anarchists are following Ron Paul and supporting him. Okay, now he says one way or the other, it's going to be manifest in the political process, is it not? Now that's how he starts this clip, and he's talking about how libertarianism will eventually come to be, or how eventually the state will go away, and his view of, you know, a better world will come. He says, so one way or the other, it's going to be manifest in the political process, is it not? And the answer is no, it is not. It is absolutely not. If you look to the political process as your savior from the political process, you've started right off with a flaw. Now, and this is not the beginning of course, you already know this, but I'm just pointing it out. This is not the beginning of his explanation, but it's his summary of what he's just spent the last few minutes explaining. And it reveals in that first line of this clip the fundamental flaw in his thinking, and that is that you can use the political process. Now, the political process, of course, as we know, is the state. It is the idea that you can, because under all the current circumstances that we have, and under every way that you describe the political process, it cannot happen without aggression. The political process itself is defined as the act of aggression to inflict upon one group how you want them to behave. You know, the, by pushing your own laws and your own rules and your own standards of behavior on others using the violence of the system, that is the political process. So can we bring about a manifestation of anarchy, of the anarcho-capitalist society, and let me just stop right here. We're not talking about a utopia. Go over to YouTube and look at the badquaker.com video on anarchy in the world of tomorrow, or search the website badquaker.com for the audio, or I think there's a link to the video too for anarchy in the world of tomorrow. When I'm talking about an anarchy utopia, we're going to use that phrase for lack of a better, we're not talking about a place where everything is perfect and, you know, nobody scrapes their little knee when they fall. We're not talking about that type of a setting. We're not talking about a utopia like that. What we're talking about is a world where people voluntarily obey the zero aggression principle because it is a universally preferred behavior. And when they don't obey that, there are consequences to their actions. Now that is following natural law. And I've talked before about animals and I've talked about birds quite a bit, how the birds have a natural law built into them and they follow those natural laws. Otherwise, the individual bird does not survive. And if the species does not follow those natural laws, the species will not survive. So, you know, can Adam presents this as a question, isn't this going to be manifested through the political process? No, it absolutely cannot be manifested through the political process. That's the whole point of anarchism. You cannot. This is why so many anarcho-capitalists can't get along with anarcho-socialists, because the anarcho-socialists have a tendency to want to implement their version of anarchy upon people through the use of violence. And we, on the peaceful side of anarchy, cannot accept this process. We cannot accept the implementation of liberty through the use of force. So no, you absolutely cannot use the political process to inflict liberty upon people. It will not. It's self-contradictory. The moment you become the state in order to get people free of the state, the moment you use, I should say it like this, the moment you use the state to get people free of the state, you become the state. You just simply replace one master for another. Now I'm going to go back to quoting Adam again. He says, I mean, you can't have this whole love-olution and full embracing of the libertarian philosophy throughout the United States and have this government thing just sort of going on its own. Like, at some point, we have to elect someone to go in and at least deconstruct the whole thing. Again, this is a very serious misunderstanding that a lot of people have about how a libertarian world will eventually come into being. Again, you cannot go in and deconstruct the government. It's not going to sit by and let that happen. You know, the state. Okay, first let's deal with it this way. Let's go with the old argument against libertarianism and the argument against what people claim is Ron Paul's isolationism. Of course, you know, anybody listening who's hearing my voice should realize that Ron Paul does not support isolationism. He supports being peaceful and not attacking your neighbors. But the criticism of Ron Paul's position on not being involved in foreign nations and so forth is that if America was to pull back to its own borders, mind its own business, not stick its nose in other countries' business, some other powerful country like Russia or China or whoever, you know, whichever one that they're afraid of at the moment, will come and bother us some way or attack us or dominate us, or they will come and usurp our government and we will be subservient to them or something like this. Now, that's a fear based on how states have acted for, you know, 9,000-10,000 years now that they've been around. That's how governments work. If one is weak and rich with resources, somebody's going to come and try to take their stuff. That's how governments work, because they're based on, you know, theft and aggression and so forth like this. So let's just take Adam's premise here that somehow the libertarian philosophy could take hold in the United States, and that's what our goal is, to get this lovolution, the embracing of the libertarian philosophy throughout the United States, and then somehow deconstruct this government. That's almost, you know, I'd like to be nice and call it naive, but really it's almost silly to think that we could somehow this, you know, hard numbers are some numbers put the libertarian group, Cato Institute and some others have made a very loose definition of what libertarian is, and they can get somewhere up close to 30% in polling to say maybe as much as 30% of Americans are lean towards a libertarian point of view, but their version of libertarianism is really washed out to get that kind of percentages. Hard percentages show that if you really look at how many people, if you talk to them and understand what they really believe, only about 2 or 3%, maybe 4%, if you stretch, are consistent libertarian anarcho-capitalists in the United States, and that's a big stretch to get 3 or 4%. If you get people who are, you know, 10 towards the right or 10 towards the left, but accept some libertarian points of view, you might get out to 10 or 12 or 14% that will actually come out and vote and get involved in politics and stuff. But this is all a flawed idea in a couple different directions. First off, the idea or the belief that you could get the United States to be by itself to become some type of a libertarian utopia where government is beginning to shrink down to at or close to nothing, and you get, you know, all these things that you want to do with in a minarchist society, you get the government down to that size, and then you somehow deconstruct that minarchist society. Well, the critics of anarchy are right when they say, you know, what will happen is another country will just come in and take over, because that's what nations do. That's what governments do. They see a gap, a power gap, and this is often referred to as a vacuum, and Adam later in this piece actually does refer to it as a power vacuum. One government will see a power vacuum, and it will rush in and take over. That's what they do. That's what the United States has done over and over in countries throughout the 20th century. And at times, the United States has even created a power vacuum so it could rush in. You want to see what happens when there's no government and there's this power vacuum existing. Take a look at Somalia. Now, you know, Stefan Molyneux and some others have said some positive things about Somalia, but I think most people who will actually go to Somalia and walk around and look will prefer to live, you know, somewhere in the United States or Canada or even Mexico rather than Somalia. And the reason why is because you had a state there, you had the government there, it was state-based government, and that government failed due to, you know, being messed with by other governments. That government failed, and then in the power vacuum, other governments rushed in, including the UN, which is simply a government. They rushed in, and they meddled, and they sucked as much wealth out of that area as possible, and they propped up warlords, and they did all these evil things, because there was a power vacuum. If Somalia had been a strong enough nation state to where it could have held off those other countries from coming in and looting it, then it would have continued as a government, only looting its own people. So what we have in the United States is we have a government that's basically a bunch of thieves and robbers, and they are in the process of robbing the American people. And if we could somehow get libertarian ideas in there and get control of the government through the political process, of course, then those libertarians would still be robbing the public, because all taxation is public. All taxation is theft. And if you're going to have a government based on taxation, then you've got a government based on aggression and theft. And so now you've got libertarians supporting the government they control through theft. That's not libertarians. You have become the thing you hated. But even if you could, even if you could do this, and you start to deconstruct the thing, and then you have this one country stuck in the middle of North America with a very, very, very weak or no government at all, you have just invited probably the UN, but in one way or the other, you've invited, or perhaps a North American Union or whatever, but you have invited an existing government of some form to come swooping in and take over. Or you've just created a situation that's going to be somewhat similar to the French Revolution or the Russian Revolution, where internal forces who are more than willing to use aggression are going to swoop in and take over. So the idea that you can just simply use the political process to get what you want, no, what that will produce is traditional style revolution, where there is a power vacuum and where a more evil government swoops in and takes over, and you have a worse situation than you had to begin with. This happened over and over and over through history. Because it's happened throughout history, that doesn't guarantee it'll happen again, but it's a pretty good indication. Okay, now when I come back from break, I'm going to go into the rest of this. I'm not going to take every line with as much emphasis as I did on that, but when I come back from the break, we'll look at this a little further, and I'll show some of the other flaws in the general thinking of these people who call themselves anarchists. Okay, I'll be back in 2 minutes. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from badquaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to badquaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help badquaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support badquaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do you do? Well, you go to badquaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from badquaker.com. Thanks, folks. Okay, folks, thanks for sitting through the commercial. And let me pick back up on this critique of Adam Kokesh's explanation of why he, as an anarchist, as a self-proclaimed anarchist, supports the political process and supports Ron Paul in trying to get Ron Paul elected to the presidency of the United States. Okay, so again, his flaw here is the idea that we can somehow achieve a libertarian or an anarcho-capitalist society by taking control of the political process and then having electing someone to go in and centrally plan the deconstruction of government. Now, and really, that's, I changed the word slightly, but that's what he's saying. He's saying that we'll use the political process to put our people in control so that we can centrally plan a new society. Isn't that what he's saying? Comrade, isn't that what he's saying? I think that's what he's saying. That's not libertarian. That's the opposite of libertarian. This is a great temptation for libertarians. You know, it's a great temptation for all humanity. You say, well, I don't know how this would work, or I don't know how that would work. We need a central planner so that we can have liberty. You just eliminated the possibility of liberty. You see, the market itself does not need any central planning, and that includes the market for government. We don't need central planners, and we don't need the political process, which is violence. The political process is always based on violence. All voting is the act of one group of people inflicting their will upon another group of people. And it doesn't matter if it's 75 to 1, or if it's 30 to 5, or if it's 30 to 30, or 30 to 31. Anytime you have one group of people inflicting their will upon another group of people, and it's backed by violence, that is the political process, and that is how elections work, and that is democracy. And it's evil. We, as anarcho-capitalists, if we are consistent in our philosophy, we are opposed to all forms of democracy, because democracy itself is evil. All right, so let me get back to his words here. To privatize all the resources, to distribute them back to the people, to turn over the resources the government has taken over to those that they were taken from. Ooh, my, you didn't think that line through very well, Adam. Let's look at it again. Let me back up a line so we have it in context. He says, like at some point we have to elect someone to go in and at least deconstruct the whole thing, to privatize all the resources, to distribute them back to the people, to turn over the resources the government has taken over to those who they were taken from. Well, like who? Native Americans? Or perhaps, you know, the Mississippian culture that the current Native Americans superseded? Or are we going to, you know, and who are we going to, exactly how are we going to do this? You know, what you just described right there, Adam, is called socialism. It's where someone centrally plans the redistribution of wealth and resources to people hand-chosen by the group that's in power that's doing it. You can't do that. You have to fall back and let the market handle these things through what some are fearful would be random processes. But really, it's the market. The market would, if the government were not there. Let's push this back to the original flaw that he's going with. Again, he's only thinking using nationalistic eyes to see this process. He's only thinking of the United States of America. He's thinking of somehow that a libertarian world can come to being within the hard-defined borders of the United States of America. And that is a major flaw. That is using nationalistic and statist eyes to try to envision a libertarian paradise. It's entirely flawed. We are not, you know, I'm sorry, this is maybe going to offend some people, but we are not Americans any more than Canadians are Americans, or Mexicans are Americans, or, you know, people from, I would argue people from Greenland are Americans, and people from the Caribbean islands are Americans, and, you know, people from Honduras are Americans. You know, those lines that are drawn on the map that some people are so in love with are simply lines that politicians drew on a map without ever visiting those regions. So, you know, I hate to put it this way, but if you try to force old nationalistic statist views into a libertarian world, it's not going to work. And if you try to manage the central planning of a redistribution network to try to disassemble government using the political process, you have completely abandoned all the principles of libertarianism. Okay, so then let me take back off to what he says here. To privatize the resources, to distribute them back to the people, to turn over the resources the government has taken over to those they were taken from. So there's a process for that, and I think it's not an easy process for us to be extracted from. So it becomes a chicken and egg argument. Are we going to have the paradigm shift and then elect someone to dismantle the government? Or are we going to elect someone to dismantle the government and then in the process or in that election change the paradigm and get a more free society? The answer is no. When you hand me two false choices, the answer is no, I don't choose. I will not choose between two false choices. And this goes back to something he said earlier in the video, but I didn't want to do the whole video and take up the whole the whole podcast listening to him talk through this. But he gives the old standard argument that, well, if a master beats you three times a week, wouldn't you vote so that the master can only beat you twice a week? And my answer would be no, I'm going to do everything I can to stop from being a slave and stop being underneath the master so that he can beat me. Because the problem is not whether he beats me three times a week or once a week, or even if he doesn't beat me at all. My problem is that he has no right to be my master, and I will not accept the possibility that I am a slave. Now, if you're accepting the premise that you're a slave and you're willing to accept a lower amount of beating, then you're still a slave. But if the individual who's being beaten refuses to accept the premise that he's a slave and just says, no, I'm not a slave, I may be captive, you may be beating me, and there may not be a lot I can do about it, but I'm not going to grovel at your feet and justify your beating me by asking you to beat me slightly less. I am not going to legitimize your claim of ownership over me by cooperating with your dominance of me. Instead, I'm going to refuse to submit to you. This is something. I don't have the guy's name in front of me, and I apologize. It's not right on the top of my head, but I was listening to Live Free FM at the Let Freedom Ring podcast over there. And it's something that he had said that is absolutely dead on target. And I can't exactly remember the quote, but it was basically along the same lines as what I'm talking about here. You can't accept the idea that you're a slave. You are only a slave if you accept the idea that you're a slave. When we accept the idea of that we are a slave, then we're just like the rest of the herds out there. We have to keep in our mind that we are free. And reject the notion that we're slaves just trying to work into a better slavery position. That's entirely backward thinking. He was talking, the guy I was referring to a second ago from the Let Freedom Ring podcast, he was comparing it to being in school. And if you think about being in a school, in a public school setting, you have some kids that are, you know, like the class clown, and they're a little bit out of control. But they're kind of wacky, and they kind of, you know, they're kind of against the authority. But the teacher really puts up with a lot from them. And you have the kid who's the rebel, who's just the, you know, he's a problem to the teacher, and so the teacher knows how to deal with that kid. And then you have other kids who just don't care, who just don't recognize the teacher's authority. They don't try in any way to function in the class, because they recognize that the whole thing is a stupid joke, and they don't recognize any authority at all coming from the teacher. Now, this doesn't mean they're the class clown and they're making a big deal of themselves, and this doesn't mean that they're, you know, openly trying to fight the teacher or openly disturbing the class or whatever. They just sit there and look out the window, and they're like, whatever. And if the teacher wants to punish them, they're like, whatever. That person cannot be, the school system itself cannot reach that person, because that person is free. That person is not bound, mentally speaking, in their mind. They are not bound by that student-teacher relationship. They're free, and they're the biggest threat to the teacher's authority. Not the kid who mouths off. that kid can be sent to the principal's office or disciplined or whatever, be sent into some other type of class. And it's not the class clown that's having fun, yelling, making jokes and all that kind. The teacher knows how to handle them as well. But the person the teacher can't handle is the person that just refuses to care. Just, I'm not a part of this. You just, whatever you want to do, you're going to do, and there's nothing I can do about that. But you don't own me, and I'm not cooperating with you, and I'm not going to make this easy for you. I'm not going to necessarily stand in your way, but I'm not accepting your authority over me. That's the kind of anarchist that the state can't handle. It doesn't know what to do with us. And that's what we have to be. We have to be in our minds. We have to be free in our head, in our minds, and not fall back on the false idea that what we need to do to fix the state is to get involved and be part of the state, and then we can fix the state. A marriage with the devil is not a way to produce an angel. Okay, let me try to get back to where I was at here. Okay, so he says, are we going to have this paradigm shift and then elect someone to dismantle the government, or are we going to elect someone to dismantle the government, and then in that process or in the election change, the paradigm and get to a more free society? Well, you can't have a more free society. Sorry Adam, you're fundamentally flawed right there. You can't have a more free society. The master beating you less doesn't make you free. The master's not beating you at all, but you're still a slave, you're not free. You can't be pretty much free. You can't be, a longer leash doesn't mean you're not on a leash. A bigger cage doesn't mean you're not caged. You can't be a little bit more free. You can't be some more free. Well, mostly free, kind of free. I'm free around the edges. It doesn't work. It's a fundamental flaw in the thinking. To try to use the political process to get more freedom is entirely the kind of a myth that the state wants you to believe. Okay, then he goes on to say, I don't really know, but one way or another, you need the political aspect as well in order to achieve a free society, because I think in dismantling the government, if we were to simply, and then he pauses for a minute, and he says, like, for example, if the dollar were to collapse tomorrow and you had certain economic turmoil, really some chaos as a result, what would spring up might be worse. Well, yes, of course it would be. Absolutely. Once again, you're only thinking about national borders. You're not thinking about us as a species. You're not thinking of humans. You're not thinking of a species-wide shift. If, going back to what the criticism of anarchism has been right along, if you have one little pocket of anarchism, if you have one little pocket of free people functioning and doing their own thing and everything, immediately they're going to be attacked. Some other stronger government is going to swoop in on you. So this idea that we can have just one country, one America, that's over here being totally libertarian and free, and somehow you've had some kind of committee that has centralized and managed the disassembly of the government through that socialist process, I might add. You've somehow produced, using socialist processes, you've produced a libertarian society, which in itself is kind of goofy if you think about it. But then to think that you could do that and not have the result being a worse situation where, some type of tyrant is just going to swoop in and take over. I don't know how anybody could accept that kind of a fantasy. Okay, let me go back again. And this is the argument that if you abolish government, you'll have a power vacuum and you'll have a worse power take its place. Yes, Adam, that's right. That's why you can't abolish government. You cannot abolish government. If you abolish government, it's like trying to kill dandelions in your yard by going out and kicking the dandelions. You know the part that sticks up with all the fluffy little things all over it, all those tiny little seeds? If you think you can get rid of dandelions in your yard by going out and stomping those, then you're going to be sorely mistaken in a few months when they come up everywhere. And that's the way it is with government. You cannot use the tools of government to defeat government. You cannot use the methods of the state to defeat the state. You have to get that out of your head. Right now would be a good time for me to talk about Marines, because Adam is a former Marine. And this is the way Marines think. And this is why you have to take your finger and put it right in the middle of their forehead and poke on their forehead and say, stop thinking like a Marine, at least, and start thinking like someone in the libertarian movement. You cannot use force and aggression and dismantle or abolish the government and expect to have anything other than a worse government. So let me see if I can find in my notes where I pick back up on his thing here. Okay, so he says, now, if the power is abolished because people want it to, because they believe in freedom now, well, obviously, you're not going to create a vacuum in which another corrupt power can come into being. But we do need an orderly dismantling of the government. And that's why the revolution, the love-olution, still needs politicians. All right, now, do you see what he did there? He almost caught himself in his fallacy. Now, he says, if the power is abolished because people want it to, because they believe in freedom now, well, obviously you're not going to create a vacuum in which another corrupt power can come into being. But we do need an orderly dismantling of the government. That's why the revolution, then he corrects himself, the love-olution, still needs politicians. You're falling back on central planning. You can't take your hands off of it and imagine a way that government you're not imagining a way that the market is going to deal with government. You do not have faith in the market enough to realize that the market can deal with the government. Instead, you have to go in and centrally plan the disassembly of the government, and you are saying you need politicians to do that for you. So once again, you're trusting in the myth of the state to be able to correct the problem of the state. You're believing that the political process is your way to liberty. That's called statism. That's not anarchy. That is not anarcho-capitalism. To believe in the power of the market, it can be argued, is faith-based. Although I believe there's a lot of evidence to support it, and I believe there's very logical evidence to support it on a theoretical base, and there's historical basis for it to support the belief that the market can function and can fix itself and can fix other things. And on the other side of that, the belief that the state is the solution, the belief that the use of political means, the belief that the use of political means is legitimate, is statism. That's what statism is. Adam, you're so fundamentally wrong on this. And in this little section, he almost catches himself. He almost sees the flaw. Because he says, obviously, if everybody wanted to abolish it, then we wouldn't have the power vacuum. Well, again, you're falling back on the problem of democracy. You're putting faith in democracy, that if we get enough people to believe in libertarianism, then we can make it happen through managing the situation and through abolishing the government. That's just statism. You're just asking to replace one master with another. And then he polishes it off. He says, and this is his final sentence, final couple sentences. He says, and that's why I support Ron Paul, and that's why I don't think there's any contradiction in being an anarchist, an anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, a philosophical libertarian, and being engaged in the political process. Well, if you believe that being engaged in the political process is a moral, is morally acceptable. Now let me say that again so I'm not misunderstood. If you believe that being engaged in the political process is morally acceptable, you are not an anarchist, an anarcho-capitalist, or a voluntarist. You might be a good libertarian. You might even be right. I'm not making a moral judgment on you one way or the other. But if you believe that it's morally acceptable to use the political process, then you are not an anarchist, an anarcho-capitalist, or a voluntarist. Because the political process is based on the use of aggressive force. Without aggressive force, you have no political process. The two terms are synonymous. There's no one cannot exist without the other. The political process is based on aggression, and the use of aggression for the purpose of causing other people to behave the way you want is the political process. Go back to, you know, who? Frank Charteroff, Murray Rothbard. How many do I have to list? Franz Oppenheimer. I could continue. Hans Hermann Hoppe. I could go through and quote dozens and dozens and dozens of these people who have stated over and over that the political means is violence and aggression. That's what it is. That's the definition of it. You can't have the political process without having aggression. And the use of aggression for the purpose of controlling other people is the political process. So, Adam, I'm sorry. You're confused. You're probably a really, really good libertarian, but you have missed the concept of anarchy. You might accept it on a theoretical basis, but you have not accepted it on a moral basis. And if you do not accept the zero aggression principle as the moral philosophy to adhere your life to, then, you know, the level of consistency, strictly on a moral basis, your argument, as you take it out further, if you don't, well, it's basically the minarchist anarchist argument, and I don't have a time in the last 1 minute of this podcast to lay out the whole argument. So if you believe you can accomplish good through the use of the political process, you're not an anarchist, you're a minarchist. So you need to just get your terminology straight and embrace your philosophy and go with it. And I'll say, hey, great, let's work together towards the, you know, to educate people towards the work of liberty, and we can work together. But don't call yourself an anarchist if you're accepting the premise that minarchy is a plausible philosophy. The two things, really, when you really get down to it, they're similar in 99% of, you know, or maybe less, or maybe, you know, but they're pretty much similar in 99% of their philosophy until it boils right down to the core. And it says, but in the end, are you willing to use violence and aggression to inflict your will upon others? If you are, then you're a statist. Even if you're a tiny little statist, it's still statism. You're not an anarchist. You're not an anarcho-capitalist. You're not a voluntarist. If there's aggression used through the political process, and you can't have the political process without aggression, then you're not an anarchist, and you're not an anarcho-capitalist, and you're not a voluntarist. You are trusting the state. The use of the political process is the state. The belief in that, the belief that the political process can produce good, that's the state. That belief, that myth, that is the state. And if you grasp that, and you hold to it, and you think that somehow, someday, we'll get the right guy, we'll get the right leader, and we'll be able to elect him and inflict him upon all the bad guys, and we'll have the good world that we want, well, there you go. You've just committed the same mistake that they committed in the War of Independence that turned into a tyranny. You've committed the same mistake that they made more dramatically in the French Revolution. You've made the same mistake that you're doing exactly what Cromwell tried to do in England. When Cromwell decided, well, you know, the king is corrupt all of his ministers are inflicting their government upon us, so we'll kill them and make our own. We'll be boss. I'll make myself a boss. We'll make ourselves God. We'll raise ourselves up on the throne. We'll make ourselves to be the God. Isn't that what you're doing? Folks, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. And thank you very much for listening.